Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What is... Dax, are you...
tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McKusick. We have a great show for you today. The MVP ballot's due on Wednesday. We have an MVP voter with us today, Mike Sando of The Athletic. Outstanding football writer. If you're not familiar with him, an Athletic subscription, very much worth it. And Mike Sando's writing is one of the really special things you get. Mike, thanks for joining me, first of all.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, appreciate it. He's here before, talked about the betrayal index a few weeks ago in terms of how that had affected Lamar Jackson this year. And we'll get back into that a little bit. But Mike, you are an MVP voter. Votes due on Wednesday, correct?
Yeah, I think our votes are due today.
Oh, really?
Okay. I think today. So I don't know if I'm not supposed to disclose. I don't think I'm even supposed to disclose that I'm a voter from year to year. I think here's why. Because there's gambling on this stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. So what happens is people from these gambling networks, you know, they want to have you on, and then they want to have a little scorecard on the side and think where you're leaning, right? So that they can have an advantage in the betting of this stuff. And so I've laid out different visions for it, but I try not to just go over the top, you know, with exactly what I'm going to do. And I don't make a decision until the end. I don't have any agenda on anybody or anything like that. So,
well, appreciate that, Mike. And I know better than to ask the question. We've had Aaron Schatz on as well, and didn't ask him the question either. And he was noncommittal, as he should be in terms of what's going on. And yet you still kind of sense from his argument about the thing.
Sure.
how he would go.
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look at that great article from The Athletic. And this came out after week 17, prior to week 18. So it has 16 games of data in it for all the quarterbacks, and plus perhaps Saquon Barkley you want to talk about a little.
Yeah, I think Barkley's interesting. In fact, I heard from another voter today. He's like, hey, Derrick Henry's numbers are better in a lot of ways. What about him? So, but I think Barkley is most interesting because of how he affected that team. Mm-hmm. And just what their orientation's been before, what they were with him was very different.
Yeah, it's and the Jalen Hurts situation being what it is, there's still significant favors over Green Bay at home. To me, they're one of two teams in the NFC, along probably with the Lions, that are the most devastating looking in the conference. I wouldn't be surprised if it's those two for the championship.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I agree. They're good up front, you know, and especially on the offensive line.
Yeah, they definitely handled the Ravens very, very seriously in the game in Baltimore. They were the real team to out physical them in significantly like that. All right, well, terrific. Let's start going through the article then in terms of what the arguments are. I know at the high level there's a heavy EPA component to it.
There is. Yeah, I think it's, yeah, you know, I think about this often, like, you know, because I love to read old stories from 20 years ago, or I was researching something in the late 90s, and they were talking about how this quarterback only had 18 touchdown passes and only 7 interceptions. That was Mark Brunell heading into the playoffs. And you read the way stuff was written a long time ago, and it's a little quaint, you know, with the non-metrics. And I wonder what we'll be thinking 20 years from now when we've moved on to something else and realized that, you know, some of the maybe this isn't the way to do it, but I think that I do like EPA because it really makes sense to me. Now you can turn the dials on it and I was at ESPN when they developed total QBR, you know, which was a way of trying to divide the credit up within EPA. But I generally like EPA for team units over the course of a season. For quarterbacks, I think it's pretty good. Certainly, there's some extreme plays that can swing it one way or the other, but over the course of a whole season, I think it evens out decently.
Yeah, I would agree. The one question I always have when people want to talk about it, EPA, is which EPA are we talking about? Because there's a lot of adjusted EPA numbers out there, adjusted for drops or this or that.
Yeah, I don't do that. Now, like Kevin Cole's a friend of mine, you know, he does, he has a great, I think, a Substack or, you know, podcast and stuff, and he does his own adjustments. So he's going in there and saying, like, hey, the drop passes, or I don't know if he may weight the sacks and interceptions a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you do with Caleb Williams? He's got 180 sacks. You know, I'm joking, but he's got a lot of sacks. That kills your EPA, but a lot of those are on him. How many? What's the percentage, right? You could look at all that, but when you start doing that a lot, you're also making decisions. Like, you're
subjective decisions, you're saying.
You're making some subjective decisions, which are arguably better than not making any decisions, possibly. But, like, I'll give you an example. Lamar Jackson's EPA really takes a hit from aborted plays. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you assign that all to the quarterback, that does affect him a lot more than it affects Josh Allen. So I like to be aware of those types of things, but I still think it's useful enough to use. I use True Media. So Albert Larqueta is a friend of mine who I worked with at ESPN, super smart guy. I think he manages their EPA model. There was a point this season where I was noticing, like, I was looking at ESPN's total QBR, and they had, like, a little bit of different EPA numbers than what I had, but they're using an adjusted EPA. Mm-hmm. So I actually had somebody send me all of Lamar's play-by-play using their model, and then I did the model that I'm using, and I put them together on a play level, and I was like, because I wanted to see if it was like a big difference, because I care about these things, you know. Mm-hmm. And it was like so close. I mean, it was like within, for the whole season, it was within like one EPA when everything was together, and so that made me feel pretty good. Now, within that, though, you could make some adjustments. And total QBR makes all those adjustments and comes out like the same order of the top three guys that raw EPA would, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I feel good enough about it. You know, I feel better about it than other things. I think if you're using something that makes sense for everybody, you apply it equally to everybody, that's not bad.
Yeah. I mean, sure. Any formula applied consistently, you would hope would show you things.
But we're also looking at other things too. It has to all fit together and pass the smell test. You know, I like to look at their conventional numbers too. That tells me something, right? If I can take three or four different snapshots, let's look at the EPA per game. Let's look at the EPA on pass plays. Let's look at the team components like we do with the betrayal index, the defensive special teams. What's that doing to how you play? I think we can look at all that stuff together and have a feel. And sometimes people latch on to one of those things, usually because they're a fan of a team, or they're in charge of the Ravens blog or whatever, and they predictably all latch onto the things that help their guy. Mm-hmm. I feel like I don't do that. So I would rather not latch onto those things and just mention them. Like I did in this article, I mentioned Josh Allen's offensive line or Joe Burrow's weapons or Lamar has this. But I don't think any one of those things is so overriding that we should latch on to it just to prove a point, right? That feels like you have an agenda then.
There is a lot of that, and that's where a lot of the stand on one foot while throwing on a Monday afternoon kind of thing stats are out there.
Yeah.
Let's start at the top in terms of how would you, you know, one of the things you do in the article is look at a comparison of the quarterbacks, and you've included Burrow in there as a third there. How do you compare the high level, commonly available stats?
So like the conventional ones? Well, you would think that Lamar had probably the most efficient season, and you can see that with, his yards per attempt, his touchdown to interceptions, which works into the passer rating, didn't have an inordinate number of sacks, you know, was pretty good there. I think what's interesting about him is the you know, so much of his rushing yards is now scrambling and not designed. I think that's a shift that's masked by the fact that he still has good rushing yardage. But I would say that he probably had the best combination of just being productive and efficient on the just conventional familiar stats.
All right. And when we move on to things like EPA, I know you, one of the things you had was EPA per play meeting an MVP standard. And I want to let you say the rest of it or I'll mess it up for you.
So one of the things I can do is look at all the other APMVP winners. I can go back to 2000 and I can look at what was their, if you combine them all, what was their EPA per play? And that, so that would be EPA per play where they were, you know, either on a passing play as the quarterback, or they could be running with the ball. And so I figured that out to be 0.27 EPA per play. And so I just said, okay, let's take all of the games for Jackson, Allen, and Burrow, and let's rank them all from their highest to lowest EPA per play on a game level. And then let's just see how many of them are at that sort of 0.27 level. That seemed interesting to me. You know, mm-hmm. would there be a big spread on that? And so, you know, Lamar Jackson came out with, I think, 11 of those games, and Josh Allen had 11, and Burrow had 4. So that was a little telling to me.
Looks like Josh Allen has 8. By the way, from what I'm looking at the article.
Jackson has 11 and Allen has 8. Is that what I said?
No, it's 11 and 11, I thought. But
It's 11, 8, and 4. So it's 11 Jackson, 8 Allen, 4 Burrow. But when you look at Allen, he's got like 4 other games that are right below that, you know, where it's 0.26, 0.23, 0.22, 0.20. Well, those are pretty good. And as you know, in EPA, maybe in that 0.20 game, his receiver fumbled the ball and it got returned for touchdown, right? There's things like that. So I would not take this to the bank, but I think 11 to 8 to 4 gives us a little bit of a contour that, you know, okay, that's probably, you know, that's probably a little bit of an advantage towards Jackson going into the last game, which he didn't add to in the last game.
No, he would have had a below the line game for sure in that last game, right? And they won. It was the first time the Ravens had won with him having a below the line game, right?
Yeah, late in the year. Yeah, absolutely. He was getting better defensive support late in the year, so maybe that bodes well for them in the playoffs.
All right. Take us through the next part of this article, which I think is reordering. Well, it's some of the it's the two betrayal components.
Okay, so for betrayal, the betrayal index, the idea behind that is, how hard is it to win as a quarterback for reasons beyond your control? So we use EPA to measure how well the offense, the defense, and the special teams contribute to winning. And what I love about the model that TruMedia uses is they have some mechanisms, little adjustments in there to where if you add up the EPA on offense, defense, and special teams for a play, it'll be your team's score in the game. So that's very useful to me because I can quickly look at a game and see where it was won or lost. So what we do is we take all of the EPA associated with a quarterback and we rank all the quarterbacks that played, I think, started at least half the year, 8 games. And there's 32 of them, which is very convenient because there's 32 teams. So Lamar's number 1, you know, Jared Goff's number 2, Josh Allen's number 3, Tua's number 4, maybe surprisingly. And you do all those 1 to 32. Then you do the same thing for their defense special teams, which I combine because it's the non-quarterback component. They're not really contributing. They're not on the field for those. So now we rank those quarterbacks by their teams being good or bad defense special teams. So for somebody like Lamar, this season, his quarterback EPA is number 1. His defense special teams is 22 out of those 32 quarterbacks. So he's at a minus 21. 1 minus 22 is a minus 21. So that's a pretty high betrayal, right? To be that good at quarterback and in the bottom third, basically, defense special teams. If you were in the top 5 defense special teams, you might be undefeated, right? With the number 1 quarterback and doing that. We saw that almost with last year with the Ravens, right? They had a much better record. and they dominated people. So Lamar's being betrayed more this year on that. And so we do that for every quarterback. And we found Joe Burrow was actually most betrayed by the end of the game. He was number 5 quarterback and number 30 defense special teams. So he's minus 25. And so that was the top, kind of like Burrow most betrayed, then Lamar, then Brock Purdy, which is interesting because there's a lot of discussion among people covering the 49ers of who's at fault for what. Tua, very betrayed, which, you know, their offense is probably better than you think when he was playing. Jaden Daniels and Josh Allen. Those guys were kind of all in the top 7 for quarterback EPA and all in the bottom half of the league, defense special teams. That creates a betrayed quarterback.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it's a good notion. And if you want to hear more about that, Mike's previous episode about the betrayal indexes is an interesting one if you want to look back in the film study archives there. Now, let's move on and talk about, I know there was one more thing in here and now I'm kind of, no, I guess that.
Well, that was, the other thing I did that was related to it was, hey, if we now just look at only those defense special teams EPA games, okay, let's rank those from best to worst and see if which games you won. So what's interesting about Lamar, and that's what was notable in the mid-season betrayal index story, was that he was winning a lot of the games where the defense and special teams weren't good. Mm-hmm. And that's unusual. There's usually it's hard to win once your defense special teams EPA is like a touchdown worse than average, you're like at -8, you're not winning those games. It's just very hard to overcome that. And Lamar was able to win those this year at a high clip and at a higher clip than the other quarterbacks, although Burrow had more games that were even worse. So Burrow had some that were like almost impossible to win, and it's hard to hold those against him.
Yeah. So the point being with these EPAs that they all add up to the score in the end of the game, meaning all of the EPAs from various components will add up to the net score,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that really should tell you, like, a minus 10 is really your 10 points in the hole and your quarterback's got to be 10 points better, or yes. your offense yeah. needs to be 10 points better.
Absolutely. And if you look at, you know, what's your odds of winning if you trail by 10 points in the first quarter, it's like very low, you know? So you're basically spotting the team. So I love this for looking at how the games are won and lost. So if we look at the Ravens this year, in the last game of the year. Oh, what's an interesting game to you? Let me find this. I'm gonna say there were.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
First, the Ravens' worst defense special teams EPA game was week 5 Cincinnati. Okay, they went 41-38. They're -15.1 combined defense special teams. That is like, you never win that almost. Mm-hmm. Never win that. So their 3 worst defensive EPA games, special teams defense, they were 3-0.
Is there a net zero in special teams between the two teams? Is that a net of like our kicker and their kicker?
Kind of thing? Yeah. So that what's interesting about that is, yes, these are all zero sum. So if you finish a game -15.1 on defense special teams, the other team is +15.1, right? That's how it is. So if Justin Tucker misses a kick and it costs you 2.4 EPA, that would be like, it's a very high likelihood that you're going to make the kick. If you're standing there on a 95% make kick, your expectation for scoring is 2.8, right? Something like that. You miss that, that's like a minus, close to a minus 2.8. Mm-hmm. There's some other adjustments with field position and time left and to getting the ball and all of that. So if we lose 2.8 on that special teams EPA on that kick, the other team gains it.
Okay, gotcha.
So you have to be careful in using that to evaluate like a special teams unit, because unless you think your team's controlling the other team to miss or make a blunder, right? You're getting credit for some things that maybe the other team's screwing up.
So just to be clear, because I think I heard something slightly different than this, the special teams is a zero-sum offset there.
All of it is.
But, well, let me get to the other part. Yeah. I think it's one team's defense versus the other team's offense is comes net zero. Okay, got it.
Yes, yeah, so... Yes, so in the game against what's the most let me just look at the most recent game, week 18. So the Raven defense is plus 19.8 EPA just on defense. So that means the Browns offense is minus 19.8.
Mm-hmm. And then the Ravens offense net of the Browns defense was about 6 points because they won by 25, right?
It was 6.2. It was 6.2, and the special teams was a minus 0.97. So what's really cool about that is I can, when I look at these, like I can click on that plus 6.21 of offense and it brings up all the plays and I can sort them in order of EPA. So I can quickly see Derrick Henry going 43 yards for touchdown is added 5.7 EPA because it's third and two.
Yep.
Third and two, you're not thinking you're going to get a touchdown.
Yeah.
That's the biggest swing play of the game.
Okay, that's very interesting. And not the Wiggins pick six. The Wiggins pick six, I would have thought, would have been a pretty big swing as well. But they may be limited. Sometimes EPA limits.
Well, no, I'm just looking on offense. So okay. The Wiggins pick six, I would be clicking on the defensive EPA, right?
Sure.
So on that one, the Wiggins pick six was, yes, that's the biggest play, probably the biggest play of the game. That's a 7.3 swing. So if you think about this, so it's second and seven. Mm-hmm. Cleveland's at their own 23-yard line, and the touchdown goes the other way. I mean, that's a huge swing. We will sometimes see a play, though, swing at 11-12 EPA, and that's when you've got first and goal, and the other team takes it back all the way. So first and goal from the 3-yard line, you're carrying 5-6 EPA yourself right there because it's so sure you're going to score if there's enough time. And if it goes the other way, it's like – you minus that and give the other team six or seven huge swings. And that's why I say that's a two score swing right there. It actually is in EPA.
I think I understand what you're saying exactly, but that also points to the fact that this couldn't possibly be a cap thing because it has to cap for the defense. I've seen caps of like 4.5 points for any interception, including one that's run back all the way because there's some luck component or whatever.
Well,
you can't do that in this version because you have to have it add up to the score of the total.
Absolutely, yes. Now, somebody could make that decision. So if we, over the course of a season, there's also going to be a play where, Lamar makes a bad read the receiver bails him out and goes 80 yards for a touchdown and Lamar gets that EPA, right? And there's going to be another play where it goes off the receiver's hands and it's returned for pick six and that counts on Lamar. But over the course of a season, hopefully those things even out. Now, if they don't, what I would do is say, hey, Lamar Jackson was only 10th in EPA this year, but they lost the most EPA on drops of any team in the league. So keep that in mind. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't factor those out, he'd actually move into the top three. I would rather do that than be trying to guess how somebody turned the dials to make that pick six not be worth what it was.
Great.
Wouldn't
point.
You?
I absolutely. I'm getting a little bit of clicking from you for right now. I just want to say
something. Let me make sure I'm plugged in good.
Yeah. Okay. Sometimes we don't have that, but that's, I did want to get to three questions. And great article, by the way. It's a great read, highly recommended. Yeah. And if you're not subscribed to The Athletic, you're really missing out. Mm-hmm. But there are three questions I had related to this. And the first deals with the ordered outcomes approach you're using for EPA on a game level or betrayal on a game level, say. And it deals with the ordered drive length of touchdowns, which you may have seen a graph of. But the Ravens, no field has been too long for them this year. And they've had much longer drives than what the Bills have done. The touchdown drives were very close in totals, like 59 to 58.
Yeah.
And entering week 16, I believe, or entering week 18.
Yeah, I wrote about this in the piece. I have a paragraph on it. Yep.
Oh, I'm sorry. I missed it.
Well, you know why I have it in there is because I read these. I love to read the debates back and forth because then it gets me thinking. And so Buffalo's offense has started a league-high 28. This is going into this last week. A league-high 28 drives in opponent territory. I have a column for that in my own stuff. The figure's 19 for the Bengals, 14 for Baltimore. So I definitely look at that. I said that helps explain why Allen's Bills average more points per drive but less EPA per drive. Because the EPA per drive adjusts for that. Right.
So their starting EPA on the drive was higher, but their EPA added during the drive was lower.
Was lower.
So they could score. Yeah.
Which makes sense. If you're going to take if we start every drive at the opponent 5 yard line, we're going to average very high points per drive and very low EPA per drive,
yep.
right? Because we're doing what's expected. We have a layup. It's like a breakaway layup in basketball. You and I make it.
Better not miss. Right. There you go. Okay. So that's terrific. That was one of them. The other two things I had are a little bit different. The quality of competition has been an enormous factor for the Ravens the last 2 years. In fact, it's really hurt them in terms of seeding probably, but they were 10-4, set the all-time record for wins against winning teams last year. Nobody had ever had more than 8 previously. They had 9 again this year, which is the second highest total, obviously, of all time. And the Chiefs, it was weird. They could have had 10 this year, but they decided to rest their players, which is one thing. And then Atlanta dropped the game to Carolina, which is a weird on the margin kind of impact that could have otherwise, both of those games could have gotten them to 10. I guess one thing I'm thinking, as a voter, as you look at this stuff, how much do you consider quality of competition for these teams? Because Buffalo, for example, has not played a very tough schedule. Cincinnati has. They've played a tough schedule being in the AFC North. But I wonder how you look at that.
Yeah, I think anything that's extreme should be taken into account. I don't generally make it override everything, but I do. I have in my general team strength report that I have a column called quality wins, so I can see that. You know, like New Orleans, Jacksonville, and Carolina didn't beat any teams this year that finished with a winning record. The Ravens, like you said, had 9, Kansas City 8, Detroit 7. I think it's worth taking into account when there's a big disparity you know, like that, when it's so hard to break ties in these things, if you're close, I think those types of things can come into play. I wouldn't build a whole case around it, but I think it's worth mentioning, just like those drives, you know, those drives being easier. I think it's legitimate to mention when there's an extreme.
Can you relativize for me what the value in your mind is of the quality of opposition versus the quality of supporting cast, which is often brought up in this year's MVP voting?
Yes. Most of these, you know, when you look at these EPA rankings, we're assuming a relatively average supporting cast, right? Mm-hmm. If you're going to use those. I think it has to be real extreme to be that big of a deal. I always feel like there's a baseline level of weaponry that a quarterback needs to function. And we've seen at different times of Tom Brady's career where they dip below that line and he looked ordinary. Remember that? It'd be like a month of the season. You're like, has Brady lost it? And you're like, well, he doesn't, you know, Gronk and Edelman are out. He can't do it anymore. So I think those extremes you do take into consideration. Someone just has a horrific offensive line and there's no chance. But I think those are more of notes off to the side than build the whole thing around that.
Okay. And you'd say in both cases, in terms of quality of competition or supporting cast, similar in how you would approach those things then? So quality of competition, yeah.
Yeah, I think you have... Well, I don't know that you would weight anything the same unless they were the same. Like, I would say who you're playing is probably more, is going to vary more than who's around you, wouldn't you think?
Okay. It certainly could, yeah.
I think, you know, when you play bad defenses, it's a big help.
Okay.
And I think for most of these quarterbacks, what's around them, they have some good and bad. Mm-hmm. You know, but if it was super extreme, I guess, you know, maybe I need a better answer for that. But I probably don't have an equation, a formula that's that direct to just put it to say what the input is, you know?
Okay. I think it would be unusual to have a be considered for the MVP when you didn't have at least kind of a baseline supporting cast that was pretty decent. Whereas I think, in part because the NFL scheduling formula, you do get fairly large variation in opponent quality that's you know, yeah, it's encouraged by the league. So to me, it would at least be at the same level. If people are saying that the supporting cast that my guy had sucked, and you know, I was on the other side of that, and I would say the quality of schedule that my guy had was a lot tougher.
In that case, I would probably lean more towards the schedule. You know, I feel like there's usually not just some amazingly complete team. You know, you have one area that's good. You know, Joe Burrow clearly has the best wide receivers, but he may have the worst offensive line, right? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, Lamar Jackson's receivers haven't, you know, over the years, I think they were better this year, but that hasn't been a great strength of them. But they've had this amazing run scheme that really made the best use of Lamar, you know, mm-hmm, and helped him. So I generally think those types of things even out a little bit more than probably a schedule does.
Okay, last question here, and I want to let you get going here, is that the Lamar effect, as we call it here in Baltimore, is that every running back who plays with him has a incredibly elevated success rate. And that's true from everybody from end of career guys like Devonta Freeman and who was the other guy, Latavius Murray, when he was playing here, having big seasons, to players early in their career like Dobbins and Edwards having absurd success rate and then going elsewhere and not being as good in only 1 year in San Diego there. But Derrick Henry is a big case here, because he had a 49.3% career success rate in Tennessee. It's 46% the last 3 years combined. This year he's at 58.8% and just 0.1%, I should say, below the all-time record for 275 plus carries. So
that's just awesome. You doing it by so success rate, is that your main measure?
Yes, Football Outsiders measure, and it's the 40% on first down, which I think it got changed at some point to 45, but what's reported on PFR now is 40%. So 40, 60, 100, 100 for the four downs.
I like that. So I think my success rate one is just what percentage of plays help the EPA, but that may not be a good one, because I always feel like rushing EPA, well, it's probably okay. What do you think? Is percentage of plays that help the EPA a good measure of running back success rate, or do you like the Outsiders one better?
I'm more familiar with the Outsiders one, and it's more apparent to me. And if I'm anything else I do, I can't replicate by looking at a game book. Look at a game book and I can say, okay, A, B, C, D, E, okay, he's got 14 out of 19 successful carries this week.
Do you have Henry's in front of you?
Yeah, I have the Henry for the year. Sure, I'll bring it up.
Because I would love to see, I can tell you what, this is interesting. So according to the success rate we have here, it's successful offensive play percent on run plays. Percentage of plays with 50% gained on... Oh, this might be a 50% gain on first and second.
It's 50 on first and second now.
So, well, this is interesting. I'm just looking at the rush success rate that I have in here, and it would show Derrick Henry at 53.5% this year. What do you have?
I have 58.8, and it uses 40, 60, 100, and 100 on the percentage of yards by down. And that is the old Football Outsiders.
Or I'll just add it myself. I can create my own formula. That's just one. I probably haven't used. I look at it, but maybe I don't do enough running back articles. That's good. I'll look and see what I've got for that, and I'll create my own to do that. But it's definitely higher than he's been, except for 2020 with the Titans. He was very close to this.
He was close, but he was not as good. He was actually at 56.6% that year. So anyway, Mike, I've taken all the time of yours I possibly can, and really appreciate you coming on. It's wonderful to hear a really thoughtful MVP voter who's going through a lot of layers of this and is open to thinking about new things, because a lot of people, they've made their case, they've made their argument, and they don't really want to hear necessarily the next thing. But
I love learning I'm wrong. I love finding out I'm wrong. That's the best day you can have. You got a little bit better.
All right, Mike, tell people where they can find your work or maybe talk football with you online if they want.
Well, definitely at theathletic.com. You can find me there. And then also at Sando NFL on X is a good spot too.
All right. Outstanding. Mike, thanks again for coming on. Other folks out there, thanks for listening. If you want to do something nice for the show, tell a friend about it. Tell Mike Sando's been on and point him in this direction of this pod. This is a good one to listen to. Mike, thanks again for coming on.
Thank you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.